As always, even though the music says Two Guys Gaming, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this particular series, I am reading and reacting to part of Dune, the classic sci-fi novel by Frank Herbert. I say that I'm only reading and reacting to part of it because this has taken longer than I anticipated, so I cut it down to hopefully end right about where the movie does, the first movie, and then we can pick up later in the year when the third movie comes out so that we can be more in line with that particular movie. It's actually been a lot less time since the last time that I recorded. I don't know, how long has it been? Let's check it out. About a little over 2 weeks it's been since the last time I recorded, so we're getting this wrapped up actually pretty nicely in order to start the next book, which is The Burning God, so that I can complete that series and be ready to do Hail Mary, because the movie's coming out in March. It's funny because a colleague mentioned Hail Mary the other day, and we both talked about how much we liked it and how much we liked The Martian. And then today I was perusing Reddit, and one of my anti-AI pages was kind of giving Andy Weir crap because he used AI to make his wife look like a cavewoman. So I guess either way, maybe we'll get some feedback on that one. I don't know. We'll see when we do it. All right, I think that's enough for introduction. Let's get into the book. In this particular episode, I'm going to cover chapters 20, 21, 22, 23, and 24, which again, according to the minor research that I did, seems to be where the first movie ends. I will start with the summaries of each chapter, and then I'll give my thoughts of it, and then we'll wrap up, and you can go on about your business. Here we go. Chapter 20, Summary. Earlier, Yue is discovered with the unconscious Duke Leto by one of the Emperor's Sardaukar guards. The Sardaukar wants the Duke's signet ring, but Yue insists that he does not have it. When the guard refers to Yue as a traitor, Yue realizes that he will have this reputation forever. He hides the steel suits and the Duke's ring on the ornithopter and thinks privately about how much his plan relies on Duncan Idaho. Then he waits for the Baron's arrival. Chapter 21 Summary. Baron Harkonnen arrives on Arrakis. Given his enormous size, he glides through the palace using a floating device. His soldiers fight and overpower the surprised Atreides men. Brought before the Baron, Yue demands that the Baron complete their deal and tell him whether his wife is still alive. The Baron agrees that Yue can join his wife, and Piter kills Yue. Leto, heavily drugged, is dragged before the Baron, who talks about Paul and Jessica. Piter admits that they have lost contact with Kinnet and Sigo. He suspects an accident has occurred. An ornithopter is also missing. Furious, the Baron tells Piter to resolve the situation. His shouting penetrates Leto's daze. Leto is relieved that Paul and Jessica escaped. When the Baron draws close to Leto to question him and brag about his victory, Leto remembers the tooth. He thinks about his life and his family, then bites down on the fake tooth, releasing the poison gas. The gas kills Leto, Piter, and everyone else in the room except for the Baron, who survives thanks to his shield and floating device. After the room is vented, a Sardaukar guard demands to see Leto's body. The Baron is angry that the Emperor will see the poison attack as a sign of weakness. Now that Piter is dead, the Baron will be forced to put his cruel and stupid nephew, Glossu Rabban, in charge of Arrakis. As he leaves the room, he demands food. He also orders his servants to bring him a sex slave, who resembles Paul. Chapter 22 Summary. Paul and Jessica hide in a still tent under the sand in the desert, told to wait there by Duncan Idaho while Idaho searches for Kynes. Jessica discusses Yue's betrayal. As Paul thinks about Yue's actions, he realizes that he is numb to his father's death. Rather than mourn, he is meticulously plotting. As Paul and Jessica listen to a radio, they overhear that the Sardaukar are disguising themselves as Atreides troops in order to attack other parts of Arrakis. Paul knows that escape from Arrakis will be impossible, so he makes a list of all the items needed to survive in the desert. Like his father, he believes that the Fremen have enormous potential as an ally. While Paul plots, Jessica reads a manual about survival on Arrakis. She believes that the Fremen's religion suggests that they have been influenced by the Bene Gesserit. Paul tells Jessica the truth about the way Leto treated her in recent days. Jessica cries, knowing that Leto loved her. She then realizes that crying is a waste of moisture on Arrakis. While Jessica mourns, Paul has a prophetic vision about the Fremen in the future, thanks to a combination of his years of psychic training and his proximity to the Spice. He knows that his mother is pregnant with a girl, and he tells Jessica about his plan to live with the Fremen. Paul also reveals that both he and his mother are descended from Harkonnens. Jessica is the Baron's daughter, as part of the Bene Gesserit breeding program. He believes that he is something quote-unquote unexpected, rather than the Kwisatz Haderach. Paul lapses into another prophetic dream, in which he sees an aggressive religion spreading across the universe in the name of House Atreides. He does not want to choose this future. When Jessica asks about the Fremen, Paul reveals that he will call himself Dumuad-Dib, which translates to, quote, the one who points the way, end quote. After, Paul finally has a moment to mourn the death of his father. Part 2, Muad'Dib, Chapter 23 Summary. Paul and Lady Jessica wait in their still tent for Duncan Idaho to return. Though Paul drinks the water recycled by his still suit, Jessica is reluctant to do the same, fearing that doing so would indicate that she will never escape Arrakis. She dreams about Duke Leto and hears Paul's voice singing about the Spice, the Fremen, and religious war. At night, with the tent buried in the sandstorm, Paul uses a special tool to dig themselves out. Paul and Jessica stand beneath the stars and listen to the birds of Arrakis. Paul believes that they should move on from the tent. Jessica listens to her son and realizes that her life now orbits around him. They see large columns of fire in the distance. The Harkonnens are conducting a bombing raid and killing everything they can to destroy House Atreides forever. Paul and Jessica head south, finding cover among the rock formations as ornithopters fly over them. Chapter 24 Summary. Tufir Hawat and his men escape from the Harkonnen massacre. Knowing how badly they have been beaten, Hawat swears revenge on the Harkonnens and the traitor. However, he still believes that Jessica betrayed House Atreides. Hawat and his men find a group of Fremen who tell him that Gurney Halleck sought safety with the smugglers. The Fremen suggest that Hawat and his men travel across the desert at night, dropping the shields so as not to attract the sandworm's attention. The Fremen want to perform their death rituals for the deceased members of Hawat's unit, extracting all the valuable water from the bodies. Hawat struggles to understand what the Fremen mean when they talk about the, quote, the water need, end quote. The Fremen tell Hawat that Leto is dead, but they are unsure what happened to Paul. They quiz Hawat about the Harkonnens and the Sardaukar. They have killed many of the elite Sardaukar soldiers and captured their weapons. Hawat is astonished that the seemingly primitive desert people could overcome the Emperor's best soldiers. He is intrigued by the constant references to a mysterious figure named Liet. When Hawat sees the Fremen performing their death rituals, he finally understands their intention to render a man quote-unquote down for his water, meaning to extract the potable liquid from their bodies. Although his men are horrified, Hawat tells them to respect the Fremen culture. When an ornithopter passes overhead, the Fremen hide. They spring an ambush on the Sardaukar soldiers and then use the captured ornithopter in a suicide attack against the Sardaukar troop carrier landing nearby. The Fremen leader explains to Hawat that the life of one Fremen is a quote-unquote reasonable exchange for the deaths of dozens of Sardaukar. Just before they are about to escape, however, the Sardaukar spring an attack of their own, killing the Fremen leader. And now, for my thoughts on the chapters. As I did last time, I'll break it into three parts. We'll do chapters 20 and 21 first, then chapter 22 by itself, and then chapters 23 and 24. And then I'll wrap it up and move on to The Burning God, which I already started listening to. My thoughts on chapter 20 and 21. Yod dies a traitor. Playing both sides, as often happens, ultimately failed. Part of his plan did pay off. Paul and Jessica escape. The big part, however, failed. Leto's revenge against the Baron. The Baron lives and is now pissed. Throughout this whole thing, I wonder how Jessica could miss Yod as the traitor. Maybe too close to the situation? Perhaps. Believing the best in people can cloud your judgment. Then, as I realized his double dealing, I realized that his conflict perhaps brought conflict to her. Ultimately, though, he dies without much of a resolution. What is his legacy? Traitor? Savior? Good person caught up in the wrong situation? Bad person given an excuse to exact his retribution and revenge? This goes to show the depth of this story and the characters involved. Leto, whose death is not a defeat, he saves Paul, kills Spider. It comes off as a moral victory. However, what did they say? Moral victories are just losses. Either way, I may have too harshly judged Leto's death. I spoke last time about how it was not a hero's death. I stand by that part. He ultimately failed in the goal of killing the Baron. However, he kept his house alive, and he took out Piter. Already you see the effect that has on the Baron. I mean, he wasn't the absolute brains of the operation, but he definitely held sway and made many important decisions. Piter, I mean. The Baron, as we just discussed, lost Piter, lost face, is now obsessed with a boy prince. Yikes. This guy is even more disgusting, if that's possible. In addition to the L's he just took, in spite of beheading a House Atreides, he starts to obsess over Paul to the point that he asks for another young man as a sort of stand-in. His grip on sanity and reality is rapidly fraying. How much more dangerous will he be without these tethers to reality? Chapter 22, I subtitled A Study in Grief. Paul, initially numb to the death, instead he's hyper-focused. This could be a common reaction to trauma. The brain shuts that part down to allow you to survive the pain of the loss. At least it's been a common reaction that I have to death. And I've dealt with quite a bit of death over the last few years. My own and others in my tribe. Parents, grandparents, friends, and complete strangers. It looks like uncaring or unfeeling, but I promise you it's the exact opposite. If I let myself start feeling, I may never stop. So, Paul shows some maturity in his response. He knows that with his father's death, he represents the last hope of his house. And he uses that to also clear the air with his mother. I can relate to that too. You definitely should take the time to work through things before it's too late. For what it's worth, Jessica mourns in a very different way. Granted, the news about Leto brings some measure of closure there. She understands the Duke's actions at the end. That doesn't make the loss any easier. In fact, it probably makes it more difficult. She cries. Then, she worries about the quote-unquote waste of water. In addition, they must both come to the realization that they are also Harkonnens. Paul is not quite what the prophecy foretold. I mean, this is some heavy shit to drop right after the Duke dies. As an aside, I'm about to be a little bit woke here. A few things. The Baron is a gay man, is listed as a predator. I've seen some people discuss that that's maybe some lingering homophobia from the time. It's possible. I don't know, obviously, what Frank Herbert was thinking, but from what I'm going to discuss towards the end of the show, probably is not that, although, again, you never know exactly what people are thinking. Paul, he's the man, he's logical about it. He faces up to it, and he plans, and he pulls everything together, and he's the strength. Jessica is the woman. She's emotional, she's weak, she's broken down. She needs to lean on Paul now. He's the center of her life. I'm just saying, there's potentially some dangerous ideas surfacing here. We'll see if there's anything here, or if I'm just, like I said, a modern sensibility relating to the past in the wrong way. My thoughts on chapter 23 and 24. Hawat. His grief drives him over the edge. The Duke is dead. Jessica, the traitor, runs free. This opens yet another thread for her and Paul. So I guess already I'm being proven somewhat wrong, because Hawat is being an emotional little B word, so maybe I was off on my earlier analysis. I'm still going to keep it in. Whenever I think the book will zig, it zags every single time. Even something as seemingly basic as the Fremen gets turned on its head through the telling of Paul's story. A primitive desert tribe? I should know better. Of course not. The colonizing force always tries to write off the natives as primitive and unable to care for themselves. And yet, again, I still fell for it this time. The Fremen display military might and brilliance in their sacking of Sardaukar. they have learned to live and thrive in an otherwise inhospitable environment. We see that the water reclamation rituals, again misunderstood and demonized by outsiders, are actually a necessity for that survival. In addition, life rituals, as they often are, become sacred to that society. However, before we paint them with a broad brush in either direction, they show that they are effective, efficient, and pragmatic. The suicide attack is a reasonable exchange for them, one life for several. This rich, diverse, and complicated society is now in the crosshairs of white savior Paul Atreides. Ah, damn. I just made that connection, too. At this point, it certainly looks like it. But from what I've heard so far, there must be more to the narrative. I don't think that Herbert would bring us to this point just to have us eat shit and give us white Jesus taking over our primitive people in the desert. Holy fuck. This book was written in 1965 and Still, Bush invaded Iraq and the Bush invaded Afghanistan. Truly, some of us remember our previous trip through this timeline and try to warn others. But nobody ever fucking listens. Good God. Wait, what am I talking about? One of my pet theories is that we've lived this before, and it's just one big Groundhog Day situation where we keep doing it again and again until we get it right. Some, like Frank Herbert, remember the mistakes and try to drop hints to people of how not to fuck it up this time. Instead, nobody listens, and they fuck it up again. Okay, moving on. Let's land this plane. Topic for another time, perhaps. For several reasons, this is an awkward place to end the Dune series right now. There's a white savior angle, parenthetically, that we will surely cover more later, in parenthetical. It's two chapters into the second part of the book. A wild turn of events just happened that seems like it will kick off into pure insanity. But as I said earlier, I did some research and this is about, parenthetically, with some changes, in parenthetical, where the first movie ends. So a movie versus, been a while on one of those, in the next few days. Plus part three in December, sets up the rest of this book, and the next for the end of the year. Nice little bookends, parenthetical, pun intended, and parenthetical, on 2026. So we leave Dune behind, for now, and move on to the final book in the Poppy War series, The Burning God. Additionally, I will cover season 2 of Fallout with the same rigor that I wrote about season 1. I just finished that one up yesterday, and as I've been saying, it is so fucking good. I wish this series could last forever. So be on the lookout for that. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us if you haven't already at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. I don't remember what the most recent article was. Let's look it up. Oh, it was on Stranger Things. I talked about the last season of Stranger Things a couple weeks ago. We also have the deep dives that I've done, the Fallout season 1 that I mentioned, the Marvel Zombies deep dive that I haven't talked about in a while, but it's pretty fun if you want to check that one out. We also have this podcast. There are links to our socials, YouTube, which actually has been getting some love. I posted an Atari 2600 top 5 hidden gems, and it got over 1,000 views, 31 comments, 21 likes, or maybe the else 31 likes and 21 comments, something like that. I don't know. I'm pretty excited about that. The follow-up that I did for the quest calendar didn't quite hit as well, but it's a niche topic. It might take a bit to find its audience, and maybe it never will, but I still want to have fun with that. I hope to put up a deep dive on Hero. That was supposed to go up in January, but I have it on the schedule for the end of this week now, and then I'm going to start in on my Nintendo Entertainment System / Famicom top 5 hidden gems. Then I will again come back with something that I was going to do in January with the comic appreciation post for Spawn. I missed that, but I got a couple new Spawn books, so I can weave those in and upload that as well. And then I'll do a deep dive on one of the Nintendo games, and I think that'll take us to the end of February on the YouTube. There's also a TikTok, which I post to semi-regularly, not as regularly as before, but I'm still updating it every now and then. I really have to get back to doing my models, because that's one of the big things that people like to see on the TikTok. Think that's it. Can't think of anything else. I will catch you in a bit with part one of The Burning God. Talk to you then. Bye, guys.
We are two guys gaming.